Gentlemen, may I direct your attention to something quite extraordinary?
Chris, the Herons are back. And we got messy.
What's going on? What? Where is the information?
I guess we're getting ready for a sister kissing fiesta.
I felt like we were playing a 2-8. It was just a 2-8.
Let me tell you, Danny is about to get destroyed in the chat. So you
are we kissing sisters, Chris?
And maybe stepsisters, but not regular sisters. I've done a little bit of research on him. When it comes to FIFA, this guy's 68.
We're going to have the greatest player of all time on the team. If there's a time to believe, it's now.
It looks like a heron shat all over it. So you guys are literally getting excited for a rank 65 player on FIFA 23. We got some pretty good FIFA cards on our squad now, all right?
You gotta understand, Kevinto. This is how we scout our players here on the show.
Just look at FIFA cards.
No question about it. I am ready to get hurt again.
Chris, the Herons are back. Welcome, everybody, to episode number 154 of the Battered Herons podcast. I am your host, Daniel Granada, and alongside me, as always, Mr. KBD. How are you doing, sir?
Listen, 2 days away, we're going to wax that ass, homie. Are you kidding me?
Well, I don't know about all that. I would pump the brakes a little bit. Pump the brakes just a little bit.
All right, I'll pump the brakes.
You saw how the defense looked yesterday, but we'll get into all that and a lot more. Before we do, we have Uncle Mad joining us again. We're going to talk, obviously, a little bit of the first leg, see what he thought, then some of the second leg, some predictions, what we think might happen. Maybe we'll change some things tactically, just a couple predictions here. But before we do, Chris, I wanted to ask you about the tickets, because I know you want to go to the game and you've been checking in on it. And right before we went live, you said you're going to go in and check. So what did you find as far as the tickets go?
So right now, the most affordable ticket on Ticketmaster, okay, I'm not looking at any of these other sideways sites. On Ticketmaster, it is $100. Now, and this is sort of questionable, Danny. $100 is the cheapest ticket for standing support, which is section 109.
Okay.
So that means anyone can purchase tickets to section 109.
Why are you talking so slow?
Well, because, I mean, I didn't think that they would sell tickets in that area because of the, you know, the
Oh, I see what you're saying, that anybody could purchase them. Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, right now I can purchase a ticket in 100.
I think it's similar to that always, but good luck trying to get in there with the yellow shirt.
Well, I mean, obviously, you're not going to get in there with a yellow shirt. I don't know what they're going to do with your ass. They're going to put you in the corner somewhere. But for the most part, it's for sale for general public. I mean, other than that, you have section 111 for $153. That's the cheapest ticket you're going to get. Close to our section 123, you got 157 plus Ticketmaster taxes.
You know, it's wild. And thank you, Stancy. Yes, I'm feeling a little better. Not 100%, but definitely much better than last night. Last night was
a lot better.
Section 125, the day we were talking about it, the day that Joe Kerr was tweeting about it all day long, that day, section 125, row one, was literally going for $100. Yes. How it shot up to $300 the very next day is wild to me. Like, all those tickets that were at $100 that everybody was complaining about because they paid so much more just recently, they all shot up. Like, I'm not sure what the team did, but they made sure to fix those prices and hike them back up, which was wild to me. But yeah, all right. Well, that was the tickets, and I guess we're ready for our special guest. Uncle Mad joins us once again. He was here with us last week to preview the first leg, and I'm really curious to see what he has to say, even though I know some of his thoughts because I watch his stuff, and he had an episode, which I'll let him promote his channel so you guys can check it out also. Welcome to the show, Mr. Uncle Mad. How are you doing, sir?
Doing good. Good to see you fellas again. I feel like practically the new co-host with you guys. I've been on so much lately.
I'm telling you, Nashville, we just keep buying heads. But I mean, I guess no beating around the bush, just straight to it. What did you think of the first leg between Nashville and Inter Miami?
I thought it was more competitive, at least from our end, than I thought it would be. Because if you guys remember last week when I was on here, I was pretty down on us, especially considering if Hani was going to be out. He came back in, so that gave us a little boost. I don't think I gave our guy, Maritime Messi, Jacob Schaffelberg. I don't think I gave him enough credit coming in, but he's been.
I don't think anybody did. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. He's always been like, you know, dangerous with his pace, but this season so far, he's been off the mark scoring goals. I think he's got like three in Champions Cup so far, which I think he had like four or five total all last season. So he's, you know, if he's, that's going to become a consistent part of his game to add some goals. That's just an extra element we didn't think we had before. I really felt like we had like two or three more pretty good chances to get a couple more goals in there. And I think that's what really came back to haunt us is you can't let, you know, you guys hang around, you know, because there's always going to be a moment of Messi brilliance. And now Suarez looks like he's just the same where you can't go to sleep at any point in time because they'll snatch one back. So, you know, we felt like we had a chance where we could have been 3-1, even 4-1 up going into this leg. And now coming back 2-2, it's a lot more of an uphill battle than it could have been. And I think the missed chances we had, that's where I really thought we got hurt. I'm sure we'll talk about some of the calls and stuff like that, but I mean, those to me were like, you hate to see those, you'd like those to go for your team, but I mean, to me, when you're playing Miami, the goals is where it's got to be. You got to get your goals when you get your chances.
Absolutely. And technically, us ending up with a draw, we were talking about it last week, how much we hate the away goal difference, but I mean, it is what it is. That's still in place, and that's almost like winning the game 3-2 going into aggregate, because now going into this game, if we were to draw 0-0 or 1-1, we'd still walk away with the dub. Now, if we draw 2-2, then all of a sudden we got to play extra time and go to penalties. And if we win straight out, you know, it's different. And if we were to draw 3-3, then all of a sudden Nashville wins because they would have the tiebreak with away goal. So it's a really funky rule. I really dislike it. But as of right now, we technically have the advantage. Before we get into the calls, because I know everybody wants to talk about the calls, but before we get into those, were you expecting Nashville to be as aggressive when it came to pressing our back line? Because I was kind of surprised that they were pressing our back line as much as they did. And I thought that that was a big game changer because, as you see, when Orlando let us bring the ball up, we kicked their ass. And yesterday, when Montreal finally played that low block towards the end of the game, all of a sudden, we started attacking more and almost made a comeback ourselves back then. So, and Alejandro here, thank you for the super chat, is complimenting your back wall, Uncle Matt.
Good stuff back there. Yeah, no, it was almost like our coaching staff may have watched the video last week because you called it exactly last week. You guys talked about it, that Orlando just set back too much, gave you guys too much space, and that they didn't take advantage of some of your shakiness when your backs have the ball. And I think I think I said this on the stream last week, it's kind of hard to know exactly what we're going to do because with the injuries, how much we've rotated coming off the previous round of the Champions Cup, it's been hard to get a read for what exactly Nashville SC was going to try to do this season. Gary Smith had talked before the season that he knew we needed to take some steps to be more aggressive in attack because that he knew that was our big shortcoming was, you know, one of the best defenses in the league year in, year out. But when Hadi Mukhtar hasn't been scoring, we've looked like the most anemic offense you could. So he said something to the effect of, you know, hopefully when we get out there on the pitch this season, you'll see the changes we've been working on if I've done my job correctly. So he was at least putting it out there that we were working on some things differently than what we've done in the past. But with all the changes and injuries, I don't think we really got to see it until last week, really, because we had a preseason friendly that we got to go to. It was like a Wednesday afternoon here against like a Birmingham from the USL. And that was one of the fans' kind of reactions was we were pressing a lot more in that match than we have in the past. Cause you know, we've always been the team that just let the other team have the ball for 75% possession. We're fine with that. And we'll go and we'll counterattack when we get a chance. But I think they've done a pretty good job of designing kind of a selective press where we're still keeping our shape really well. We're still sitting a little deeper for a lot of times. And, you know, I'm sure there's a trigger. There's probably some kind of key thing that we've identified at least that where it's like this guy's on the ball. That's where we step. That's where we press. Or if we turn it over in this part of the field, that's where we activate the press. Cause it wasn't like we were like coming out like Red Bull New York and just like,
no, definitely
not pressing the whole match, but it was like a few key spots. Like the first shot, it was funny. Cause so I had to ref a high school game Thursday night. So I got home and was watching the match on replay, and my Hulu TV replay on the DVR, by the time I turned it on, like it cut off the first goal. It happened so early in the match. Like the first thing I saw when I turned on my DVR was Schaffelberg celebrating in the crowd. And I was like, what has already happened here? This is definitely not the way I expected things to go here.
Exactly what.
Yeah.
This is exactly what you talked about in the pregame with us in the last podcast that you were with us. Same thing.
Yeah. And I think that was kind of the key to us having a pretty good game was getting that goal so early. Cause I mean, it's not exclusive to Nashville SC, but anytime a team gets a goal that early in the game, it completely changes everything. You know, everybody has to adjust what they're doing. You know, Miami maybe was a little more aggressive than they wanted to be right out of the gates, you know, had to kind of get their composure back and stuff like that. So that kind of set us up pretty well to have a little bit of a good, you know, first 50, 60 minutes of the match before I think the legs got the best of us that last like 20, 30 minutes or so. We had a lot of guys looking worse for wear, kind of dragging there those last 20 minutes. You know, I think, I don't think it was any coincidence that I think Walker Zimmerman came off maybe like about 10, 15 minutes left to go. He's got a knee injury, so he's a doubt for the next leg, and we'll see what happens.
He bumped
there.
Knees. Him and Gomez bumped knees. Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, it was like I think it was in within like 5 minutes of him coming off that Suarez got the equalizer, and it's like that's the thing you get from him is he's got that little extra bit. Where I think all our center backs are pretty solid, but he's the one you can kind of count on to not fall asleep, not give that one little spot of space that a guy like Suarez needs. And I don't think it was any coincidence that right after he went off, the equalizer came.
Right. Well, and you brought up the beginning of the game, how Miami came out aggressive. I was surprised at how the first 3 minutes, at least, right? Because you guys scored right after. But I was surprised that the first 3 minutes, Miami was pressing you guys pretty aggressively. And I remember we have a Discord, and I sent a message in Discord. I was like, they don't respect Nashville at all. They don't think that you guys can beat them on the counter at all. And there you go. 3 minutes later, it's like, okay, let's back it up a bit. But I thought that was a sign of disrespect towards your offense and your attack. And it was surprising because we don't usually press that aggressively, especially with Messi. When you see Messi running after the ball, it was really weird. But that was interesting. Chris?
And I think it's actually from a Nashville fan's perspective, it's got to be refreshing to be able to see that your team can be able to sort of get away from what everybody is accustomed to and say, hey, we're going to go on the offensive ourselves. Schaffelberg decided to just burst out into destroy mode. And I mean, here we are first, couple minutes of the game and you guys are ahead.
Yeah, exactly. I think like, you know, with the signings we've made this season, there wasn't anything that was like that, marquee player that was going to take us up a level from where we've been at. If we were going to improve, if we were going to see better results this season, it was going to have to be either a new player add something or a current player adding something to their game that they hadn't shown before, or just an overall tactical shift from the way we've played most of the time in MLS. And that game, we got a little bit of both. We pressed more than we probably usually do. And Schaffelberg getting goals is something that's not been a consistent part of his game. So, you know, those are, you know, win, lose, or draw in this tie. I think, you know, Nashville SC, we'll see what happens Wednesday. It could go very badly Wednesday, but so far so good. I think, you know, Nashville SC fans feel, you know, probably pretty confident what we've seen the last that game and then the game at the weekend that, you know, we're in a maybe a little different than what we thought we might be this season. Because I know there was like definitely some fan base that were down, like, it's gonna be more of the same Gary ball. We're just gonna sit back and not do anything all day long. And so the fact that we've been a little bit more aggressive, that we've pushed a little bit more in attack, I think has got some excitement going, which like it was like so dreadful watching like that Colorado MLS midweek or Saturday game last week where it was like Hani was out, Sam was out. We just were the old Nashville SC not doing anything. It was like watching paint dry. And I think that game, everybody's like, oh, here we go again. And then now the last two games, Galaxy at the weekend and you guys last Thursday, it's kind of felt more like, okay, this is what we were hoping for. We were hoping that there'd be some new wrinkles in the attack. Yeah, this is, yeah, exactly. A little bit more aggressive. Not as just sit back and hope for the best type of games.
Well, I mean, one thing that I noticed is, much like you guys feel confident, I mean, our defense is looking terrible, but Messi and Suarez, spicy Messi, came out really early. He was chirping with Godoy, Suarez also, and when Messi finally scored, you could see I guess you could say happiness or how excited he was that they scored. He was really into it. And it kind of, you know, it brings into Miami fans, I think, a little bit of confidence when you see the way Messi is reacting during these games, right? Because when we see spicy, when you see that he cares this much, you're like, all right, he's going to do everything possible. Suarez is always like that. Suarez is always, he's so annoying. When I used to hate watching him play for Barcelona, but Messi, when you see Messi like that, you're like, okay, I feel confident. It makes me feel like there's a chance no matter what, because he is that guy. I do want to get into the calls, right? Because that was the controversial part of the game. But before I do, I was watching your last episode, and you talked about croc block. There's some type of area in the stadium, and I need to know, what is the croc block at Geodis Park? Because that sounded so interesting, but I guess you had talked about it in the past, so, right? Like, you just mentioned it and moved on. And I was like, no, but explain it to me. So figured I'd ask you now.
Right, right. Sure. I'm sure you guys have like similar things where you've got like little factions in group within your supporters group and supporter section. Right. So this was a group of guys and probably some girls in there. I don't want to throw anybody, you know, leave anybody out, but they kind of would sit kind of towards the front corner of our supporter section, right over where the visiting players usually are warming up. So it's, you know, the perfect spot to sit there and talk a little crap, be the little annoying pest flies on right. the wall while the other team's warming up. They dubbed themselves the Croc Block because they would all wear Crocs to the game. They just would wear Crocs to the game. So they were like, yeah, we're the Croc Block. This is the Croc Block right here in the front. They've had signs at times that they hung up against the railings to proclaim they're the Croc Block. And they kind of got a little bit shafted because the part of the support section that they used to sit in.
Sitting section?
Yeah, now they've turned it into seated area. And this was one of the huge controversies. You were talking about y'all's ticket issues. So those sections, which were used to be a part of the full supporter section, were called seated supporter section, and this came out last week that, you know, you were talking about like anybody could buy seats in there. We have that too. Anybody could buy seats at our supporter section, but you're not allowed to wear opposing teams colors in the supporter section. Like the security right. will actually come and get you out. But the club came out and said that in those new seated supporter sections, they weren't going to remove people that were in opposing jerseys. Mm-hmm. And then they tried to backtrack and say, well, actually we mislabeled this. This was never meant to be a part of the supporter section. It was always supposed to be just new general seating areas. And then that was a huge fuss of everybody being like, you didn't make a mistake. You just want to sell these tickets to, you know, whoever you can sell them to.
And exactly.
Like, stadium yeah. type thing. So it's like, you're trying to retroactively act like, oh no, we just don't look over here. And that was a whole other thing. But yeah, they used to be in the very front of one of those sections. So they've had to shift down into like the rest of the primary supporter section. But yeah, I bought a pair of Crocs and was like, jump in. I'll be unofficial member of the Croc Block now moving forward. And was like,
I personally hate Crocs.
I hate Crocs as well. And I hope I never cross that area because I might want to get into a fight with somebody with Crocs because Crocs are awful.
I don't know about getting into a fight with them, but yeah, I'm not a big fan.
Not like a literal fight, but like, I mean, what are you doing wearing Crocs? Like
a lot of people wear Crocs, man.
Yeah, I know, man.
I was in the food industry service for a very long time. So I was wearing Crocs back before anybody thought they were cool. Like I'd put a different pair of shoes on to go to work and switch to Crocs when I'd get there. So nobody would see me out.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. But now it's like, it's almost like, especially like younger kids, like the kids and stuff, like love the Crocs. They put little trinkets and stuff in them. It's like further than I'm going with it. I was just like, okay,
I'm in the education system. Right? I work at school.
You see it then. Yeah.
And I'm not lying to you. In my school, there's 3,200 students. I'd say on a day-to-day basis, over 2,000 of them are wearing Crocs. Like
they're all
well
getting
over half. Well over half. It's wild how many kids love Crocs. It really is. Now, apparently they're that comfortable. I haven't wanted to wear them because I don't want to fall in love with the comfort because I refuse to wear them.
Yeah, that was my logic was my feet have been killing me for like the last couple of months. I've sprained my ankles like 50 times and just that. So it's like, I got to these stuff like this where I'm walking around so much at like the games and stuff like that. I need something a little bit because I'm like, I'm married now. I don't need to go like show off at the games. I'm just there to watch the game. I'll just want to be kind of like, I'm more in like sweatpants. I'm wearing Crocs. I look like I'm on my couch now when I go to the Nashville SC games compared to a couple years ago. And I was like, what's my best looking jersey? Let me make sure my jeans look good tonight. Now I'm just like, these sweatpants, does that spill coffee?
That's fine. all right, so now let's get into the nitty-gritty. The refs. As Inter Miami fans over the last, I don't know, let's say like 6, 7, 8 months, we've become accustomed to no matter what happens, and you could literally go back this weekend, and I'm 100% sure if you watch every game back, there are atrocious calls being called every single game. But obviously, because of the Messi effect, everybody just assumes that the MLS just wants us to do well. So I know that there were some questionable calls, and we can get into them now. And I guess we could start with the Redondo call. The Redondo call, I get why everybody wanted a red. I do.
Elbow to the neck.
I think that's red. Now, with that being said, I don't think he purposely tried to elbow him in the throat. Now that I got to watch him this past yesterday, when we got to watch, he plays with his arms flailing in the air. He uses his arms a lot to kind of buy some room. And to almost like post somebody up or protect the opposing player from the ball. Although I do think it was red, I think it would have sucked to send off such an important player. To send somebody off of a player on an intentional foul. Because I don't think he really went for his
really,
throw.
Too,
I do think that he tried to make some room with his arm, but I don't think that he tried to go for the neck. What do you think about that, Uncle Matt, before I get to Chris? Because I know Chris also...
Yeah, so I mean, just like purely looking at it, it looks to be pretty much a straight red card for me. Like, yeah, I can probably see that it was like the intent maybe wasn't as, maybe looked worse than it actually was from that regard. Like somebody, I saw somebody in the chat earlier mentioned me being a Manchester United fan. You know, we used to have Maroon Fellaini, who was not fun to watch,
he was atrocious.
Yeah, but he was the same way. He ran with his arms. Like he wasn't out like always trying to throw elbows, but he just like seemed to run with his elbows. And so like he'd catch people all the time.
He was trying to balance that hair on the top of his head.
Yeah, and I almost thought with Redondo was like, you know, because this was his first match playing for you guys, I think. So like maybe there's like a little bit of timing, a little bit of rhythm where he thought he's going to get there quicker than he was. And suddenly he's like, oh, this guy's actually Scheffelberg Duke's faster than I thought I was. And he's trying to just get in front of him. And the arm goes where he doesn't necessarily want it to go. So it was, I don't think it was like a full on like targeted.
Like he'll take you out. Right.
Yeah, but I think it probably by the laws of the game probably should have been red card. I said in my video last Friday night, I was like, I don't think there's a conspiracy thing on these calls with Messi, but I do think he gets like same thing you see Patrick Mahomes get in the NFL.
Right.
You
know, and like, all sports.
Preferential treatment.
Yeah, the superstars get a little bit of extra, you know, greasing of the wheels and stuff like that. And also, like, you know, it's one of the things that I hear other referees talk about that I don't necessarily like about, where sometimes referees will talk about, at that point in the game, did it need that type of call? And it was so early in the game. I could have seen the referees kind of thinking, do we really want to be the ones that change this game, you know, 20 minutes into the game? Do we want to like put our authority on the game that early on? And I hate that they do that, because you want referees to call things the same way all the time. But same time, I can also understand it. It's like, you know, that early in the game, you don't want to make – like, that's the worst thing that can happen to you as a referee, is like to have a huge moment like that within like the first 15, 20 minutes where you're like, I was really hoping to just let this game settle in and just be unnoticed for a little while. I really don't want to do this right away. And like I said, I really didn't think that ultimately cost us the game. I think our missed chances cost us more than anything, because I was telling one of my friends that I went to the game with Saturday, I was like, or Sunday, the Galaxy game, I was like, man, with Messi and Suarez, the way they're playing right now, it's almost like you guys have 12 players on the field to begin with. So if you guys went down a man, then you'd almost be level terms with everybody else. Cause I mean, Messi's such a cheat code. Like at this point, with the way the form he's in, it's like you guys play with 9 players and probably still win like several of your games.
Well, and it gets back to like what Sounds is mentioning here. Just like you said, though, Uncle Matt, it happened in the first 15 minutes. So it's like you said, you try to kind of stay behind the shadows. You don't want to make such a big play early on. But technically, that play gets called across the board. Mm-hmm. No preferential treatment from minute 1 to minute 90. It needs to be called. So I can get the frustration from the Nashville fan base. But I think because it happened so early, that's why the whistle wasn't blown and he wasn't given the red card. And he seems like a pretty nice guy. Like he went up to him, hey, everything's okay, pat him on the back, like gave him the super
he knew he
nice
fucked up
treatment.
Yeah, he did.
He knew it.
That was the hey, get up so it doesn't look as like it was bad. Hey, let me help you up so that it doesn't look like I just took your head off.
Exactly. And he's lucky that Schaffelberg isn't one of these super academy actors that sits there like, oh my God, my freaking neck is you know. So
yeah, we had that also We had that with Ricky Puig Sunday, man. He had one where he rolled from, he rolled like from the top of the 18, almost to midfield on a foul. And he got the rarely seen in treatment where after the rest of the match, the whole stadium booed him every time he touched the ball the rest of the match.
Well, let me tell you something, and not to get off topic and talk about Galaxy randomly, but Ricky Puig, I was looking at stats. He has like almost 100 more touches than any other player in the league. Like the Galaxy literally runs through him. Second place is Jordi Alba. So for all of those that are saying Jordi Alba is such an important player for us, literally second. And then third is far behind Jordi Alba. So, Ricky Puig, wild how many touches he's had so far this year. So, I just wanted to throw that out there. Now that you mentioned him, I saw that and I thought it was wild. All right.
Tower Zombie. So let's relax, Tower Zombie.
We talked about the Redondo foul. Okay, so now I want to get into the offside call, Shaq Moore. I was frustrated because it was a throw-in. He gets the ball on the touchline, and somehow he like breaks two defenders and makes his way from the touchline all the way to the middle of the box to get that shot off. I don't know how the hell he did that, but regardless, it was called offside. What did you think of that offside call?
I mean, the freeze frames and the videos they showed, you know, it was I guess it looked like he was maybe a touch offside. It was one of those.
I thought
where
he
it's
was
like,
onside.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those where it's like they say like clear and obvious errors are what they're looking for, and like yeah, they, I mean, that was like three passes before the goal, even. So it's like they had to go deep in their well to get back to find that play, even, and to be like, yeah, it's one of those where it's like, you know, last winter when we had like the computer full on offsides where like they could like literally like make an AI image.
And lasers like, are like
here's his pinky in an offside position, and there wasn't much to argue with. But I was like, I've kind of been wishing for a while they changed the offside rule. I know they're working on like a test run of like doing something like, I think Switzerland's league is doing like a version where like it has to be, you have to be completely past the defense. It's not just like if a toe's offside, you're offside. So
I would love that.
I think that makes more sense because, like, yeah, the whole reason to punish it is, did you get an advantage from being an offside position? Right. And if Shaq Moore was offside, how much of an advantage does he get if his, like, nose is offside by, like, 2 inches? Yeah,
nothing.
Exactly. So it's one of those, it's frustrating, but you see those happen all the time. So it's, that one didn't bother me that much. I was
and the
annoyed,
replay, they showed like a blue line and an orange line.
Yeah, I was like, we got one team in gold, one team in pink. What are these other colors? What are we doing here? How do we, which line is which player? I was like, I didn't even know. I don't know which line corresponds to which player because you got two different colors from what the guys on the field are wearing. I was like, this makes no sense. But I was like, it's one where it's like, you know, they looked at it, they saw enough. I was like, if you saw something, I didn't see something. But, you know, they're a lot more highly trained to look at that stuff than I am. So I was like, all right, if you saw something, it's fine, whatever. Would have felt a lot better if you guys didn't score like 5 minutes after that. If that had just been like, okay, yes, lost that one and finishes 2-1. That problem just fades away. Nobody even talks about it. But because then it ends up 2-2, it's like
Lucho Lalo and Tang both say definitely offside. I don't know where you guys see that. I've watched that over. I don't see him offside at all. Everybody's like, oh, by a toe. I was like, I guess I don't see the toe, but maybe I didn't think he was offside at all. I mean, I'll take it, but I didn't think he was offside at all.
If it goes by lasers, he's getting his toe chopped off.
Maybe.
So like it must have been his toe. I don't think it was a fair call either, but like technically his toe's getting chopped off.
And then we had a goal taken away because Diego Gomez was offside. Now, I like to think about those things because everybody that says that Inter Miami gets favorable calls, I mean, we didn't get that call. I mean, obviously, I think he was he was obviously a lot more offside than Shaq Moore was. But, we didn't get that call. And then the last one, which I thought – I was surprised at how much talk there was about it, was the Messi, where he took the studs to the calf.
Yeah.
What did you think about that? Because from what everybody says, everybody's down to protect Messi and no card shown, nothing. So what did you think about that?
I don't know how you can call a foul on a guy who clears the ball, is nowhere near Messi, and Messi just slides underneath his foot when he's coming in at the end. Like, it looks terrible. Like, there's no doubt that looks like a really bad, like, hook of the leg. But at the same time, it's like there's nowhere else for his leg to go. He's not like lunging into Messi. He's just like his foot's coming down after he clears the ball, and Messi's the one who comes in late. I kind of was like, my comparison would be like if it had been like a header, if McNaughton had jumped straight up in the air to head the ball, and then Messi, like, dove underneath him and he came down on top of him with his cleats in his like back or something. Whatever, they go, oh, it's a foul on Messi because he just like stomped up his back. It's like, well, no, he ran underneath his leg. It looks terrible. There's no doubt it looks terrible. And like, honestly, like I could see the referee just looking at how bad it looked and going, we should probably at least give a yellow card or something there. Because, right. But I mean, to me, it's just like, I don't know how you call it a foul when it's like Messi never had the ball. There was no challenge on Messi. He just clears the ball. And his leg catches Messi as Messi kind of comes in late to try to get the block and misses. So I'm like, it's one that looks bad, but there's bad looking plays in soccer all the time that aren't fouls because you know, you're not going for the player. You're not going for the 10. It's Messi coming in that kind of leads to the contact more than anything in that one. So it's kind of a weird gray area where it looks so bad.
Yeah.
You think it should be something. But then if you kind of look at the circumstances and the actual play, you're kind of like, well, I don't really know how you can. Like, what else could Lucas McNaughton have done in that situation other than just, like, decide not to kick the ball? And, like, just, oh, I can't kick it. Here, you come take it. My bad. I don't want to risk anything here.
Well, when I looked at the replay, it looks like Messi's foot, like, tucks in perfectly after he gets contact on it. So it's not like he bent it and his ankle or his leg bent in or got turned in. He literally was turning it in as the foot was coming down on it.
My only thing is I'd have to see, look, First of all, he looks like baby Fernando Torres. I don't know that he looks just like Fernando Torres. I'd have to see how he clears balls usually, because I did think it was weird that he cleared it and like he went stiff leg when he went in. Like usually you kick it and then your foot goes back. He kicked it and kind of just kept driving stiff leg, which was weird to me. Now, if Messi's leg wasn't there, would he still go stiff leg? I don't know. I have to see how he usually clears balls. That was the only thing that I thought twice about. But with that being said, I mean, I get it. Like, Messi put his leg there. Would he – would this baby Fernando Torres go ahead stiff leg and to plant afterwards always? I don't know. I thought that that was a weird movement after the kick.
It was.
But maybe that's how he usually clears the balls. And then, again, stiff leg as he goes through. But again, that Messi's the one that was challenging there. So for everybody's like, oh, that was a dirty tackle. Messi was technically the one challenging in that play, not baby Fernando Torres.
Yeah, I had a tweet. I can't remember if it was who tweeted. Somebody tweeted, what do you think about this tackle by Lucas McNaughton? And I was like, that's not a tackle. He cleared the ball. Yeah. Then Messi never had the ball. But I also kind of judge it on – like, if you watch it, like, Lucas McNaughton, like, he never, like, seems to see Messi until Messi's already, like, there and underneath him. Like, I think anybody who's played has probably had a moment where, like, they saw an opportunity where, like, I can probably get a nice little kick in here if nobody's going to see it in there. So it didn't look like – I mean, like I said, it looks like anytime you see cleats going into a guy's leg at that kind of weird angle and stuff like that, it's going to look terrible. But just, like – I'm judging his body positioning. Like, his head was like focused clearly down the field. Like, Messi comes in kind of from like his peripheral on the left. So like, didn't seem like he looked at him or ever saw him. Cause you know,
he felt the pressure.
Yeah. He may have known something was coming, but it wasn't like enough to be like, okay, I'm going to clear this ball and then stomp on his leg as soon as I'm done clearing the ball, which I've probably done some stuff like that in my days playing too. So I mean, it's like, but it didn't look like that. It looked like it was just like a accidental contact, looked worse than, you know, looked bad, but it wasn't ultimately like, you know, to me, I wouldn't call it a foul if I was refereeing the game. But at the same time, like, it's one of those where if it had happened to Hani Mukhtar, I probably would have been like screaming from the rooftops, like, he tried to break his leg. What are we doing out here? Banning him for life or something like that. It's one of those, like, especially in the moment when you see it, it's your team, you're going to react a certain way. But I think, like, time, you can kind of watch it and go, well, like, what else could he have done in that situation? We're like really?
4 or 5 days later, and in the chat, they're all saying it should have been a
red. They're all fired up. Yeah.
Look, again, I like I said, I thought that it was a little weird the way he followed through with that kick. I thought that was the weird part. But again, Messi was the defender in that play. So it wasn't a dirty tackle. Do I think he went a little stiff leg? Maybe. I definitely think that maybe after a replay, there should have been maybe a yellow. But again, game didn't stop for it or anything. So,
well, that's, you know, one where VAR can't go back and give yellows. So maybe it's one where like the ref would have thought like, if I'd seen that a little cleaner in live action, I might have given a yellow, but they can't go back and give a yellow. So it's probably one where like VAR might have looked at it and been like, it's probably not enough for a red, but we also can't retroactively give a yellow. So it's one I wouldn't have been surprised if he got a yellow. I honestly wouldn't have been surprised if he got a red, because I've seen crazier red cards given. I mean, like, talk about Manchester United. Marcus Rashford had one in the Champions League this year where he literally was like trying to go seal a player off. It was very similar. He was just like trying to put his leg in front of a player to seal him off. And like the player kind of tried to put his leg in, and Rashford ended up stepping on his leg, and they gave Rashford a red card for it. It was very, very similar. Only the only difference in that one was Rashford knew where the player was clearly and was like trying to block him off. So it was a little bit different, but it's the same. Like, some of those that are so subjective and so like crazy like that. And there's ones like that where like, it looks really bad. It looks like a player's leg might have been broken. Then the ref just has to go like, that looked terrible. I think I have to give a red card on that one.
Well, and Anthony is mentioning here, ban that player for life. And I have and Aria say, yeah, that was a terrible call. And I want to bring up another message by Aria here. At that stage in the game, it should have been a yellow, especially given the fact that he's Messi.
Well, you know what? So like, that's the only thing is that you keep hearing about all the Messi protection that Inter Miami is getting. Right. But you would figure that if he's really getting all this extra protection, like, that's the first time that, like, show us that you're protecting Messi as much as you are when they finally do give him cleats to the calf, right? Because everybody's like, oh, but those aren't real fouls on Messi. Well, we finally got cleats to the calf, you know, give him something. But you know what? Like I said, I don't necessarily think it was crazy not to give a red for that or even a yellow, because again, Messi was the one that went in for the ball. I do think it was a little weird, the follow through, but he went in for the ball. You know, it is what it is.
And all right, Mr. Krabs is mentioning that player needs to be tried for war crimes.
And just real quick, just to clarify, because I did see this come up on Twitter also. Hazel's asking Danny, are the official refs on strike? In MLS, they are. In Champions Cup, they are not. So those are the official CONCACAF refs. So you cannot blame the refereeing on it being amateurs that have never reffed a top league or anything like that. Those are CONCACAF refs. Now, the MLS, like what we saw yesterday, those are the replacement DJs. Refs.
You'll see DJs. You'll see DJs, but not in the CONCACAF.
All right. So real quick, let's wrap up leg one. Uncle Mad, what did you think overall? Are you happy with the result? Like, what do you think about leg one before we get into leg two?
I mean, I like the performance. Like I said, I mean, we were more aggressive than I expected us to be. We were getting contributions from more places. If we kind of can build on that, have a little confidence, I'm going to like it anymore. I would have liked it a lot better had that equalizer not gone in. Cause I mean, that second away, like we mentioned the away goals, that just completely changes the whole second leg. But I mean, like, I actually like was thinking like, cause it was so fresh, like the Yedlin trade had pretty much just happened. And I know Jordi Alba was out, but I was kind of thinking, I know y'all also traded away Kamal Miller. And I'm like, did they go too far with like the guys you guys let go in the defense there? Cause I mean, like, mm-hmm. no, you guys are going to score a lot of goals this season, but I mean, that was a little shaky from the defense, and that was the one thing, like, you know, coming out of that was like, there's, you know, there's ways to get behind that defense. There's ways to score goals. So it's like, it's, I wish that second goal hadn't gone in for Suarez at the end, because that really, really gave you guys a huge leg up. But you know, overall, like, you know, the performance, because like, I don't want to like say I don't expect us to win Champions Cup. I just want us to play well in the tournament for the most part. So just, we can continue to play well, continue to put good performances, kind of build
don't
on
don't
it.
Don't do and, that, Uncle Matt. Don't give those Mexican teams too much credit. Don't do that. MLS team is going to win this year. I'm so sick of hearing about those stupid Mexican leagues.
I would love to get through this round to be able to play the Mexican teams, because they just were so convinced the whole League's Cup was rigged last year, because, you know, everything – we had the penalty shootout where they came back on VAR and gave us the extra penalty, and I would love to get another go-around with, like, some that. Of those teams with the Club Americas, the Monterreys of the world. So I would love
Cincinnati
to get another
to be
there,
Monterrey
but, yeah.
so bad.
But I think our first time in the competition, you know, if we can just keep putting good performances in, keep building off of it, and, you know, kind of let it be the launching pad for the rest of the season, because, I mean, that's what we, you know, ultimately need is to kind of build off. It's crazy. I don't know if you guys have been seeing, like, the results, like all of the teams that are playing in CONCACAF are then getting in the MLS Cup. It's like one win per weekend every weekend for the teams that are playing in these CONCACAF Cup. I mean, it's just like crushing the MLS results, which luckily it's a super long MLS season, so we'll have plenty of time to pick up some of the points we're dropping right now. But it's crazy how many teams are doing this and then going next one. But it was a better performance than I expected. It gave me some confidence in the way we can not only play in the competition going forward, but maybe just overall for the season, because like I talked about, it was a different type of Nashville SC performance and what we've seen.
Well, I think you made a great point with the Yedlin thing, though, because we traded Yedlin right before a huge game. We were playing 4-3-3 because we had a right back in Yedlin that can hold down the right side, and then we trade him away. We don't have a backup right back. Gressel is technically that, but he's a better right wing back. So all of a sudden we go to a 3-5-2 and we look lost defensively. So and we still don't have a backup right back. So I'm assuming we're going to go with three in the back again.
And I don't think it's any coincidence. You know, Schuffelberg is a left winger. Left so yep. right mm-hmm. down where Yedlin would have been was where so much of our threat came from. So, I mean, it was – and that might have been something that we identified, said, hey, they just dumped their right back. They might not have had time to really get whoever's coming in fully prepared. That's where we're going to go. That's where we're going to attack. But, I mean, it was kind of like – you know, I don't want to – like.
That's where we were attacked yesterday also by Ariel Lassiter. He was killing us on the left side. So,
and I'll tell you this much. I mean, over the last two games, we played two different people at the right back or right wing back position. So that right there tells you we're still searching for an option there. So,
all right. Now, before we get into leg two, I was going to ask you about the injuries, but before I do, I wanted to ask you, Nick Thesloff, one of the Nashville coaches, got arrested.
Not our coach. Okay. He's a Galaxy coach who decided to go have some fun on Broadway after being in town for the game.
Okay, because everybody in the chat, he's bringing it up. So, let me bring it up because everybody in the chat's asking about it. Okay.
All the headlines were MLS coach arrested for a drunk night out in Nashville. So, everybody, like, because I saw it too, and I was like, I've never heard of this guy, but I, you know, every team's got like seven assistants, so there's got to be somebody on the staff that you've never heard of. Right. And then I actually read like the article, and it's like LA Galaxy coach, blah 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 blah, was drunk, told the cops to fuck off, but didn't know who he was, where he was, and I was like, okay, well, this is not our guys. Like, so I keep thinking we're gonna eventually start to get like the Las Vegas bump that you hear about with like the Las Vegas Golden Knights or the Raiders,
or Miami,
or Miami even, where teams come to town, they party too much in Nashville,
they hang over.
Get that next game hangover, even the game hangover, if they can somehow sneak out. If we got like the Sunday afternoon game, they go out a little Saturday night, nobody catches them. That's what
I don't know. I'm hoping we're gonna
get more of that eventually.
Yeah, maybe into Miami. It might happen when we move actually to Miami. We're in Broward right now, so I'm assuming the team stays in Broward. But like the Miami Heat, that's a home court advantage always. Let me tell you something. Mm-hmm. When James Harden comes to town, he's going for a solid 8 points. Like that's what you're gonna get out of James Harden that day.
I've heard that like anytime he goes to Atlanta, anytime he goes to Miami,
if you're
better, bet his unders on points because he's gonna have some fun off the court when he's in those towns.
Our Tootsies gets live. I don't know how your Tootsies is, but our Tootsies gets live.
I mean, you saw some of it, I'm sure, when you were up here last year. Everything down there. It's standing room only on the busy nights across the board.
All right, so injuries. Honey Mustard, is he starting on Wednesday? And just overall, just injury update on your squad heading into the game.
So I would guess he is. He started, you know, the game last Thursday. We basically switched the whole team on Sunday for the Galaxy match. I think we had 10 different starters, and the one guy who started both games came off at halftime. So we were fully rotating, fully resting, which I know you guys did a lot of too. But he came on last 20 minutes. Like, we put him, Sam Surridge, and Tyler Boyd all on the last 20 minutes, I think. Which weirdly, I think, cost us the game, because usually, you know, we're like, we had a 2-0 lead again. And we're like, usually Nashville SC would be like, let's put on seven more center backs and just like lock this game down. But this game, we put like our like four or five best attackers on late in the game. And I think it was more looking at the next leg with y'all and saying like, let's get these guys on the field together, get them 20 minutes to run around, get some rhythm, get some energy in their legs. And it kind of cost us because we were kind of cruising in that game. We were about to, you know, kind of go it, and then all of a sudden like our midfield got wide open, we were too wide open, they stole two goals late. But I think, with the exception of maybe Zimmerman, unless there's like a late training injury or something like that, it looks like everybody should be available to some extent. You know, I would think Hani starts again, having started the first leg. Sam Surridge, I don't know that he'll be all the way back in, but the thing with him was his injury was a shoulder injury, so it's not like a muscle injury that you really have to kind of work your way back up from. Like, if he's not at risk to re-injure the shoulder, you think he'd be good to go for the full, you know, starting at least, unless like he's just not been able to run and let his fitness drop or something like that. So I would think we would have our full squad available, with the exception of potentially Walker Zimmerman. That one seems like it's maybe a more of a concern based on some of the stuff that Gary Smith has said, but at the same time, he's notorious for lying about injuries, so I never know how much I can actually trust anything he says. But I think this probably is going to be the healthiest we've been since the first leg against Mocha.
I have a feeling Zimmerman's going to play. I think he's going to be full strength overall. I can't imagine him missing this.
He's the type of dude that, like, if he can go, if there's a chance he can play, he's going to, if he can only get 50 minutes, he'll want to get that 50 minutes. Like, last season, he had like an Achilles injury that he was playing through the entire season. Like, he had to drop out of like the U.S. men's national teams camps pretty much all last year, just because he was like, I actually have to rest at some point in time. I can't keep playing. Like, he was so banged up last season. He was still hurt coming in, the same injury coming into this season. But he's a dude that if he can go, he will go. So, I mean, that's the one thing that gives me a little bit of hope that he'll play, is that that's been his track record. And not to say that anybody's ever going to be like, I'm just a little hurt, I don't want to play. But he seems to be like the dude that'll like push it a little bit more than, like, you know, the average player would.
And you love that in a player.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
All right, well, I guess we'll talk about our starting 11. Chris, do you think we're going to see the same starting 11 that we saw last week? And it, just in case you needed a reminder, here it is. Sorry to block your face, Uncle. But real quick, it was Suarez and Messi up top, Gomez, Busquets, and Redondo in the middle. And then we had Freire, Christophe, and Aviles as our center backs, Gressel right wing back, and then it would probably be Jordi Alba for sure, right, as the left wing back. Do you think we're going to see a 3-5-2 again? And do you think it's going to be the same squad?
What do you think the chances are that he's going to play a 4-4-2 or 4-3-3? You think that's possible? Because if that's the case, Christophe is hitting the bench.
I think that there's a solid chance that this time, you know how we always play the 3-5-2 because we always say that they don't really play with five in the back. I think there's a solid chance that we see the same formation, but it's really a 5-3-2 this time. I really think that they are not going to bring up the wingers as high, and they are really going to let them defend a lot more just because we know we technically have a goal advantage already. And I think that that's what you're going to see.
I mean, I could see, if anything, Kristoff coming off and then David Ruiz maybe starting. You know, obviously Jordi Alba playing left back instead. So that's something that I could definitely be able to see. If not, then we're going to stick with the same basic lineup where Jordi Alba starts instead of Noah Allen.
Well, for sure, Jordi Alba starting.
Yeah.
Jordi Alba starting over Noah Allen for sure. Now, does Noah Allen slide into left center back? I don't know. There's a chance because Kristoff hasn't looked great. I would like to see him at left center back, but I don't know if they'd put him in at that position at the moment. I think they like Kristoff's experience. Freire is just a big body out there, and Aviles. And then at right wing back, Gressel, I would assume.
Well, and Supercalifragilistic is saying, are we sure we can hold a 4-4-2 that can hold Nashville? No way. Listen, if you have Kristoff back there, that makes me kind of afraid, because Nashville can counter at like any given point. I mean, look, Schaffelberg like going against our weakest side now. That's scary stuff.
Our weakness is playing a high line, which we do way too often. That's how we lost to Montreal yesterday. Like that's what we do. We play a very high line. We're very aggressive. And I would venture to say that, and again, maybe I'm thinking too much about the whole tiebreaker or whatnot with the away goals, but at the moment we have a lead. And I think that they might play it safe. Tell Jordi Alba and Gressel not to push up so high, so they actually have five defenders. And tell the midfield and Suarez and Messi up top, try to create some magic for us. We'll connect the ball from our back line to our front line with Busquets and Redondo. Get the ball to Messi and Suarez and hope, like much like Nashville gives the ball to Honey Mustard and hopes that he just creates some magic. Let's hope if Messi or Suarez gives us a quick goal in the first 20-30 minutes and we have a 1-0 lead,
that could change the
pace. That point, forget about it. If we score first, I can't imagine. Like at that point, you basically have a 2-goal lead. So I think yes, and I look, I'm not a fan of the whole parking the bus
facts
thing.
This is right here. This is facts. We can't do this. They can do this.
Look, I watched Louis van Gaal long enough where I hate watching teams park the bus. That is so boring. But the fact that we are so bad defensively, are you really going to open yourself up to playing the way you always play? Because the way we always play is aggressive high line. They have to change something, because if we lose 1-0, we lost. Like it's yes, we have technically a goal advantage, but that goes away if Nashville scores first. So and then yes, and set pieces is another disaster. But that's the whole. We can't fix that from Sunday to Thursday or Wednesday, because that's just an innate disability we have.
Best defense is a good offense. We just need to score. That's it.
Well, I don't think they're going to be as aggressive, but what we shall see. So, Uncle Matt, I come to you. You saw how they pressed in specific moments. They were very strategic with it. I think they did a great job with it, because I wasn't expecting to see it, even though I told you that would be the best way to capitalize on Miami's weaknesses. Do you think there will be any changes in the way that Nashville plays from on Wednesday night?
The one change I could potentially see would be we got this guy, Drew Yearwood. He's a young central midfielder that we brought over from Red Bull New York. He played really well against Galaxy on the weekend. He was man of the match for that game. If we feel like we need a little bit of extra momentum, a little bit of extra mobility in midfield, he could come in for either Godoy or Sean Davis, who usually are kind of our double pivot, kind of two holding midfielders, just because he can kind of go box to box more. He can run around and kind of like create a little bit more chaos in the middle than they can. They're kind of more stay at home, kind of hold the fort down type guys. So if we want a little bit extra, one extra presser, one extra guy, you can kind of unlock some stuff in there. He could come in. If Surge is fit enough to start, I think he probably comes in somewhere, maybe like a maybe Alex Moyle drops out and Boyd plays more of a true winger position. So those are kind of the only two real changes I could see. Although, like, you know, you think you gave your best shot to Miami in the last game, so you don't want to just come out and do the exact same thing. So maybe Gary tries to come up with a different wrinkle, something there. I heard you guys talking about the lineup. The one guy you guys didn't talk about that, like, to me is always like the scariest guy for you guys, and he seems to never play when we play each other. And I'm always happy about that, because every time I watch him, I feel like he's like the secret weapon is like Robert Taylor. Like, he seems like he's done a really good job since Messi came in of, like, he's not like a superstar stud or anything, but he seems to be like, have figured out how to like sneak in and like, oh, seven people are going to mark Lionel Messi. I can go stand over here and do something. Like, and so I guarantee you there's probably like 20 other teams in the MLS are like, oh, if you guys are still dumping people, still looking to get rid of people, somebody would take him off your hands. But
he has a low wage.
Yeah. That's another reason I'm probably sure people would be like, yeah, we'll take that. We'll take that. But like,
he was starting with us until we moved to three in the back, because we were playing the 4-3-3. He was our starting left wing. All of a sudden you go to two up top and you're not going to take off Messi or Suarez.
Yeah.
And yes. And when we coined them Neymar Light on this show, because, you know, everybody's dying for the reuniting of Messi Suarez. But to me, I've been calling him Neymar Light for a couple of years now. But yes, unfortunately that's why he has not been starting, because we went to three in the back, and unfortunately somebody has to come off to put in that extra defender, even though they don't really defend.
That might be the way forward for you guys. Just play a 4-3-3, win every game like 6-5, 7-2, stuff like that.
But you know what's funny? What's funny is that with our shitty defense, we've only given up, well, before yesterday, we had only given up like 2 goals in the first 3 games. Mm-hmm. Like, our defense wasn't looking too, even though we constantly, the thing is, our midfield is decent enough where we don't turn the ball over a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And the key to our success is our midfield, connecting the back line to the front line and holding possession. But you're going to have turnovers at some point in the game, and the other team has to capitalize on those, because it's not like yesterday against Montreal. They scored 3 on us, technically 2 on set pieces, but they had a lot of opportunities. Not a lot. Let me rephrase. They had opportunities, a handful. But if you capitalize on that handful, then you got something going, because we can't defend the counter. So you will get a spot chance here and there. You just got to capitalize on it. Like your boy Messi Jr. did over there in Nashville last week.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. So I guess, are we at the prediction part of the show?
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. And I guess we'll let Uncle Matt introduce the prediction.
We always tell him to go first. Let's let him go last. Chris, start us off.
Okay. So I'll start us off. We're playing at home. And Messi has rested from his supposed destroyed leg injury. So, I think that this game, and I'm going to put it all obviously on the Miami side, I think it's going to be 3-2. I think that Nashville is going to score well against us.
Wow, you really think it's going to be a high-tech score? Okay.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, look, a lot of people are really discrediting Nashville and their sort of offensive, I guess, prowessness. You know, they're pretty good. You know, they're just not a park the bus kind of team. If they want to turn it on, I think that they can be able to turn it on. So I think I could see 3-2. Our defense is not that great. And I think that we could be able to pull a goal like within the last 10 minutes to be able to get the lead.
Okay. I'll go next. I don't think that we're going to be as aggressive. But then again, with that, I just never know, because sometimes I feel like, and again, I've said it so many times, he's forgotten more football than I've ever learned. But yeah, I still think he does some dumb things. Mm-hmm. But I would hope he's not as aggressive, because hypothetically, Nashville goes up 1-0. Nashville knows how to park that bus. Mm-hmm. Good luck scoring on them once they decide that you're not going to score. Now, could you? Yeah, messy magic here and there. But if you let Nashville go up 1-0, it's going to be a long game trying to get that one back. So with that in mind, I think that it's smart to not be as aggressive. Do I want them to play a low block and have Messi and Suarez back there defending? No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that instead of having 3 defenders, let's literally play with 5 defenders. Let's have the wingbacks go up to the midline and stay back. If you have an opportunity to push up, fine, but don't stay up there like they've been doing all season. So that's what I want to see. So with that in mind, I think that we might get a 1-0 win, because I don't think that they'll be as aggressive. I think we'll manage a goal, and hopefully in the first 30 minutes, and then just have Nashville chasing the game the rest of the way, because I don't think that they're accustomed to chasing goals. So I'm saying 1-0 Miami, and then we move on to the next round. Now it's on you, Mr. Uncle Mad.
Yeah, I'd probably lean more to what you were saying there, Chris, because I don't suspect that we're going to like come out panicked, like we just have to go get a goal. Like, I think we're going to play the way we play. We're going to like try to keep our shape, try to keep defensively sound, you know, some of the selective pressing. We're not going to be like chasing an away goal the same way like some teams might do that would lead to them falling apart. I think, like I said, I think that's one of the things that cost us the game against, or that cost us the 2 points against Galaxy this weekend, was instead of doing what we would normally do and setting up shop, we brought the attackers on because we wanted to get them some minutes, and that kind of opened us up a little bit more. I think we'll play, you know, our usual style game. I think we'll try to keep it tight. Anytime Messi's out there, you know, there's going to be at least a few handful of moments, maybe more, where he's going to be a threat. He's going to be danger. One thing I like is, like I said, we had, you know, several pretty good chances that we just didn't capitalize in the first leg. And if we've got Sam Surge back in, suddenly that kind of is a trickle down effect where he's up top and Tyler Boyd is the guy who's in those spots instead of Alex Moyle, which I love Alex Moyle. Alex Moyle is my type of player, just a grinder who maybe doesn't have the most skill in the world, but he's going to cover every blade of grass and work his butt off, but not the guy you necessarily want that's on the end of your chances when you're trying to get some goals and stuff like that. So if we've got the better, you know, attackers, the better finishers in there, maybe there's a chance to steal some goals, but I do think it's going to be tight. I could see 1-1. I could see 1-0 one way or the other. I think Miami will probably try to make sure they don't, you know, give up anything stupid and try to be a little smarter in defense there. Mm-hmm. So I think it's gonna be a lot tighter than the first leg. I think there's going to be a lot more both sides. I think both sides are going to be on the weirdly, like, you think the second leg is the leg where you'd go for it. Everybody's going to go for it. Everybody's going to open up and go for it. But I think both teams will probably be a little bit more, let's feel the game out. Let's see what happens. Let's not do anything stupid. Let's not cost ourselves the match. Like, if we win it, let's win it, but let's not cost ourselves the match. Yeah.
And so Joe Kerr said 1-0 is scary, gonna need a diaper. Just so you know, Joe, if hypothetically we score one goal, technically we have a 2-goal lead.
Yeah.
Because Nashville can go ahead and score a goal, tie us 1-1, and we technically still have the lead because we have 2 away goals.
Great.
So if you have a 1-0 lead, you can sit on that without a diaper and just ride that home because eventually Nashville scores and you're still good. So us scoring early would feel really good because all of a sudden you feel really comfortable. Now, if all of a sudden we go into halftime and it's 1-1 or even worse, 2-1 or 2-2, something like that, then be scared. Because if the game ends 3-3, Nashville moves on because then they would have 3 away goals. So it's complicated and it's annoying, but it is what it is.
We could be up 4-1. We could go up 4-1 in this game, and I'm not going to be happy. I'm not going to be like – done until the final whistle blows. God, just know who you guys got. I'm like,
it's always
any moment that it could happen.
That is the fun part of having Messi and these guys on your team is that like I was watching that game yesterday or against Nashville, and I was like, until that final whistle blows, I know that there's a chance.
Well, but it goes back to what Joe Kerr is saying. Look, yeah, but our defense is horrible.
But that's
Nashville's defense is not horrible. Like,
but that's why I think that they won't be scary. Our defense is horrible because we play such a high line. Like, for everybody that kills Christophe, Christophe doesn't work in this system. If you play Christophe, if you put Christophe on Nashville, Christophe is an all-star. Christophe has good positioning. When you have him running back to help on the counterattack, he is absolutely horrible. I'm not saying that they should park the bus, but they should stay away from playing that high line and getting beat on the counter. All right.
I would say one potential X factor could be, you know, we talked about some of the calls, some of the issues in the first game. The referees are going to talk about that. They're going to review those plays before that. So
that's true.
What influence does that have on the game? Or is
that's true?
You know, is the referees,
and we're playing at home.
Are the referees going to look at like, well, you know, Messi almost got crippled last game. We got to watch out for him a little bit more this game. Are they going to look at the Redondo red card and go, this guy got away with one last game. We got to keep an eye on him this game. Cause you want referees to be in a bubble. You want like, but as a referee myself, I can tell you, we're not in a bubble. Like when I do a team that I've done before in the season, I remember what happened the last time I refereed that team. I remember I'll say like, 9 was a little scumbag last game. I got to watch him this game, stuff like that. You know, it's like, I'm school ball. So I'm like the lowest level. It's not, like I'm like, watching, but there's definitely going to be conversations the referee crew will have. Like, you know, these were the things from the first match. How do we adjust? How do we compensate for that? So that'll be interesting to see if that has any impact on the game. You know, do they overcorrect one way or the other based on
those calls? Promise you that no Nashville defender should breathe too heavy on Messi.
No,
I think after the cleats to the leg that did not get called at all, they might want to give Messi a little payback. Like, here you go. We'll give you this.
No doubt. Like, if I was Gary Smith, if I was our manager, I would be telling our defense, I'd be like, do not touch him. Do not. Because that's the other thing with that foul. It's like, I would already be doing that just because, like, any extra free kicks you give him, any extra opportunities you give him, it's just it's dangerous enough. It's dangerous enough from like open play, but you give him a free kick anywhere near anything, it's like you're just asking for more trouble. So like for I would just be like, let him dribble a little bit. You know, don't stick a leg out. You know, just like, you know, try to get a block in if you have to on a shot. Just but don't risk it, because I mean it's
just literally even if giving him.
Even if you don't get the red card, even if you don't get the yellow card, the free kicks, he's just so dangerous in so many different ways. You don't give him extra chances.
He literally sits there and does his like messy matics, like from his brain of where he's going to get this free kick over. So, oof.
All right. So just a reminder to everybody that is currently in the chat watching live, we are going live at 10:05 for Battle Herons en Español with Xavier Lavoz and Solana. We'll be covering the Nashville game, the Montreal game, and previewing the upcoming Nashville game. So if you want, go ahead and jump on there when we're done here. We're going to wrap it up now. So, Uncle Matt, please let everybody know where it is that they could find you, because, like I said, I watch all your stuff, but just in case anybody hasn't already started following you.
Yeah, it's Uncle Mad, just like my display name there with the two D's. Sometimes there's an underscore, sometimes they're not. But if you're good at searching, you can find it. I'm on YouTube, I'm on Instagram, I'm on X, Twitter, whatever you want to call it. I'm kind of everywhere. Wherever you can be, I try to be there and have some kind of presence just because it's got to chirp somewhere.
Before we let you go, there is a quick question that I want to get to. Hazel was asking if any Nashville fans are traveling.
I haven't heard anything. You know, we tend to go for, you know, matches here and there. So I like, but I don't know, because this has been such a weird deal with like the prices on these games and then like the Wednesday night factor of it all. So I wouldn't be surprised if, like, because we had about like 5 or 6 people that went down to the Dominican Republic for our first leg there. So we've got some hardcore people that if there's a way to go, they go. So I don't know that we would have a full on, like, you know, supporter section, away section presence, but I wouldn't be surprised if we have
some yellow
10 to 12 people, like, you know, that whatever. I don't know if you guys have a designated area at your stadium for that, but like, it was really funny. Like, I always love that, because like when we play like a team like Galaxy, like we played last weekend, there was like 20 Galaxy dudes, maybe less, but like in the very upper corner, they shoved them up there in the stadium on Sunday, and just like, it's like, shout out those guys. You know, you got to give respect.
You got to give a lot of respect. Like,
coming from there. So like, we'll have somebody down there. I don't know that it'll be like a full on noticeable presence or anything like that, but I have a feeling we have some people in our fan base that'll make the trip.
Real quick, I put the link up for our Spanish channel, so go ahead and click on that if you want to catch us in 3 minutes. And then I did want to ask one quick question. If you could just real quick answer this. Aaron Brewer, the center, just signed with the Dolphins. We got some fans here asking about him. I think you said enough with that smile.
He's a hard worker. He's technically sound, but like, I think his biggest issue is he is not ideal size for a NFL offensive lineman. He was kind of a disaster when we played him at left guard. He was a little bit better when we moved him to center, but he doesn't have a whole lot of strength, doesn't have a whole lot of power. He's like 5'10". I think like that might be an overstatement. He is on the very small side for an offensive lineman. There's not gonna be any Titans fans that are like, I think my buddy actually texted me right before like that came out when he was like, did they really pay $21 million for Aaron Brewer? And I'm like, I don't think that's like the real deal, because all these deals are a little bit exaggerated in NFL, because like, you don't know what the guaranteed money is or anything like that. But
that's where the real money is. Yeah.
No Titans fans are going to be sad that Aaron Brewer is no longer a Titan.
And everybody was making such a, and not to get into American football too much here, but everybody's getting such, oh, he barely gave up any sacks. Look, defensive tackles just rarely get sacks. Why is everybody like, oh, he didn't give up any sacks? Well, centers usually don't give up too many sacks, because the pressure doesn't really come up from the middle. It comes up from the edges. But again, that's too much. Catch the battered Finns fans if you want to get some talk about that later on this week. All right, Uncle Matt, we appreciate you joining us as always. Last week, this week, I want to say the best of luck, but I really hope you whip your ass, so I'm not going to wish you luck. But I hope you enjoy the game.
Fair enough. It'll be fun one way or the other.
Yes. All right, and again, battered Herons en Español coming at you in about a minute. And Chris, any final words before we head out of here?
No, vamos al próximo. Let's go. Next game.
All right. If you're listening on audio, we appreciate you listening all the way to the end. Please leave us a 5-star comment, review, all that other good stuff. If you're watching on YouTube, thank you for watching all the way to the end. Please like, subscribe, share, tell your friends. And as always, for those of you in the chat, as always, you guys are the best part of the show. We appreciate you kicking with us for the last hour and 5 minutes. And until the next one, which will be Wednesday's post-game episode, have a good one.